Welcome to Illinois Family Spotlight, a conversation about faith, family, freedom, the state of Illinois, our nation, and conservative action. Here's David Smith and Monty Larrick.
Thanks for making Illinois Family Spotlight part of your day. I'm Monty Larrick. I'm joined by Mary Hallam Fiorito. Ms. Fiorito is an attorney, the Cardinal Francis George Visiting Fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, D.C., and a representative of WomenSpeakForThemselves.com. 1993, she was selected by the late Cardinal Joseph Bernardine as the Director of Pro-Life Activities for the Archdiocese of Chicago. Impressive resume. We're doing this interview at the Lake County Right to Life Banquet in Mundelein, so if you hear a little noise in the background. Mary, 45 years after Roe versus Wade, abortion still divides our nation, and it will divide us during the midterm elections, essentially with abortion on the ballot because of the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court.
Well, you know, you have to realize the abortion industry is a lobby that has a tremendous amount of money. I mean, the disposable cash that they have at their beck and call is rather impressive. So anytime they have an opportunity to take a moment in time politically or a moment in time culturally and use it to raise even more money, they're going to do that. Now, you know, we're seeing this, of course, for example, with Brett Kavanaugh's nomination. You know, to my mind, just as a lawyer, the Kavanaugh nomination is a very, I would say, almost conciliatory pick by President Trump. He was Justice Kennedy's former clerk, so I think that's a nod to the late Justice Kennedy, perhaps a nod to his more sort of what would be perceived as moderate viewpoints. Justice Kavanaugh has an extremely long record that can be analyzed from every single particular angle. So it's not like he pulled somebody out of a hat who was seen as more of a culture warrior who had clerked for either Justice Thomas or Justice, you know, Scalia. This was someone who came from the Kennedy mold, so to speak, who has a long record that can be analyzed, not someone who doesn't have a track record, who's seen as a super conservative. So I think that the fact that you take someone like this who is almost sort of a, I don't mean this in a disrespectful way, but kind of a boring choice. You know, I mean, it was
safe choice.
A very safe choice. And to make it look as if the end of the world is right around the corner and that abortion will somehow be compromised because of this nomination, I think is, first of all, it's patently dishonest. Secondly, it really is being used to kind of rile up their base, to motivate their base so that, you know, the base will be more inclined to give them, you know, contributions and to try to get people to vote in a certain way. But at the end of the day, I think it's going to be much ado about nothing. I think Judge Kavanaugh, rather, hopefully justice is going to be not confirmed without a problem. I don't think, again, this is somebody who's a firebrand or a flamethrower. There'll be all the usual hysterics and histrionics that we're starting to see already. But at the end of the day, I think he's going to be confirmed.
Is there anything in his record that would give you pause, that would suggest he could do harm to the pro-life cause?
Yeah, now, I have to say, with the caveat that I have not read every single one of his opinions, but I do know people who know him fairly well. So, and there are people whom I trust, who believe that his, first of all, he's a strict constitutionalist, and that's what makes the left so angry, right? Because abortion's not in the Constitution. So when you have a strict constitutionalist, they find this a problem because abortion isn't in the Constitution. It's in what, you know, the Roe court called the emanations and penumbras of the Constitution, but it's not in the Constitution itself. So you have somebody who's a very by-the-book textual guy, a textualist, they call him. And again, he's liked by the people I know and trust. And, you know, that for me speaks volumes to his trustworthiness. But also, you know, people speak very highly of his character. He's a very serious Catholic. He's very involved, with his local parish, his local Catholic parish. He's a man of service, was doing this long before he was nominated for anything. So, and he's a very good, solid family man. You know, been in a long-term marriage, two children, very much respectful. He gave a lovely tribute to his mom and dad at his, you know, his introduction to the country. So there's a lot, I think, to speak from, first of all, in terms of his record, and secondly, in terms of his personal character.
Well, the left will tell us that Roe versus Wade goes out the door. they're not telling the whole story.
Right.
Conceivably, it would go back to the states, right?
Right. Well, absolutely it would. And, you know, the day he was nominated, I did some interviews on media, and I was saying that because Personal PAC, which is Illinois' pro-abortion, largest pro-abortion lobby, held a big press conference, and there was, you know, tears and hand-wringing and everything else. And, you know, the what they failed to say is because of a bill passed in Illinois last year, HB 40, abortion will be just as legal tomorrow if Roe versus Wade was overturned as it is today, because HB 40 secures abortion for all 9 months for any reason, publicly funded here in the state of Illinois. And that's the case in not every state, but in a large number of states. So abortion will not be legal if Roe versus Wade is overturned.
Who's going to be more energized to vote in the midterm elections, the pro-life community or the pro-abortion left?
Okay, well, have you ever seen the pro-life community not energized to vote? I mean, I think that's, you know, my husband always jokes, like, the worst snowstorm in the world would not keep you away from the polls on voting day, and it wouldn't. On that issue, absolutely not. So I think the pro-life base is really, has always been energized. And if there's a particular, you know, threat to a pro-life candidate, people come out, they are loyal, they are loyal to the candidates who have been faithful to the pro-life cause. However, that being said, there's a lot of hatred and anger on the left right now that I have never seen in my lifetime. I find it kind of frightening, in fact. There is a lot of motivation to vote against anything that might even smack of support of President Trump. So, you know, that's going to be a very interesting thing to watch in the midterm. That's a good question. So we'll see. But I think you're looking at people who are both equally motivated, but by different things, perhaps.
What do you see as what's really at stake in these midterm elections?
Oh, you know, midterms are always sort of hard to pinpoint, aren't they? Because some people see them as a great predictor of what's going to happen 2 years from now in the presidential election. Some people see them as kind of a corrective, you know, to the last presidential election. You know, maybe it went too far one way and it's a little bit of a corrective. But, you know, politics at the end of the day is all local. And I think it comes down to whatever those local races are saying and doing in people's lives. Because I think this was the great surprise of the Trump presidency is that the Democrats badly miscalculated, the left badly miscalculated how unhappy so many middle-class people were in this country and how dissatisfied they were and how unhappy they were that they're constantly being called stupid and backwards and that they're clinging to their guns and religion. People got tired of it and they were presented with a candidate who was the exact opposite of everything they had been told they should be voting for, right? And they said, I think it was kind of a little bit of a, well, forget you. I'm going to do what I think is best for my family. Because my family, you may be taking your Jamaican vacations and, you know, sipping your cordials and your cardigan sweaters. We're not doing that in my house. And I think, you know, I have friends who live in Michigan, which I never thought I'd see go red for Trump, who were saying, you know, most of our neighbors, their families hadn't had a vacation in 5 years. They're driving the same car they've been driving for the last 12 years. You know, they're not poor, but they're not progressing. And there was, I think, a really stifled anger and discontent. So those midterms, I think, are going to kind of see, was this real? You know, was this the kind of put upon middle class finding their voice? I guess we'll see. But again, it's all going to come down to who those local candidates are.
Let me ask you about Donald Trump. Just a couple years ago, he was pro-choice. So from your pro-life perspective, how's he doing?
So far, so good. I have to say, I was not, you know, when during the presidential primaries, he was my 17th of the 17 choices. So I was not a Trump fan early on, but he has kept his word to the pro-life movement. That much I have to say. Certainly the two justices, I think, you know, obviously they're not going to tell us how they feel about abortion, but I think in fairness, when presented with a case like the NIFLA case, the decision we just saw in the NIFLA case, thank you, Justice Gorsuch, for siding with the pregnancy centers in California, the Masterpiece Bake Shop case, same thing. I think we are seeing a portent of what is to come. He's been faithful to the pro-life movement. Certainly Vice President Pence is absolutely 100% behind us. There's a lot of internal appointments, especially at HHS, that are you know, people who are friends of the pro-life movement, who know us well, and who are eager to see a culture of life restored to our country.
Well, speaking of that NIFLA case, right, the Supreme Court overturned essentially the California law that forced pregnancy care centers to give abortion referrals and promote abortion.
Right.
But here in Illinois, we have a similar law, and Attorney General Lisa Madigan is set on defending that measure. Why do you think it's so unconstitutional, illegal?
Well, because the government cannot mandate that you speak a message on its behalf. I mean, we don't. If the government can tell you what to say and who to say it to, what on earth do we have a First Amendment for? We don't need one. I mean, that's at the end of the day, it was constitutionally mandated, or rather, it was constitutionally inappropriate for the state of California to mandate to pregnancy centers, you must advertise for abortion agencies. I mean, if we can't be free to speak a message, and conversely not to speak a message with which we disagree, then our First Amendment free speech rights mean next to nothing.
What should pro-life voters, free speech voters, be telling Attorney General Madigan? What should they do?
Listen, she can take this if she needs to appease her base by taking this and continuing to litigate it. You know, let her have her day in court. She's not going to win. I think the court was very clear in the California decision, and there have been a number of other states, 8 other states, I believe, in total, and New York is one of them, Colorado, where very similar laws have all been overturned. So she is welcome to waste taxpayer dollars and waste everybody's time. It's not going to go her way. I can say very confidently, this is not going to go her way. And if it goes back up to the Supreme Court, I think it'll get vacated and remanded, you know, much in the same way the case with the florist did after the Masterpiece Cake Shop case.
This is Illinois Family Spotlight. We'll continue our conversation with Mary Helen Fiorito after this.
Hello, I'm David Smith, the Executive Director of Illinois Family Institute, a state-based Christian pro-life and pro-family public policy organization. I want to invite you to join us as we seek to be salt and light to a dark and rapidly decaying culture. You can do that in a number of ways. For example, you can join our email list to get timely alerts and great cultural commentaries. You can like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter, listen to our podcast, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can attend one or more of the special events and forums we host in different parts of the state. We do all these things to encourage and equip Christians in Illinois. You see, we need you to help us fulfill our mission to boldly bring a biblical perspective to public policy. Our faith requires us to be bold, speak truthfully, and love our neighbors. Join us. Visit IllinoisFamily.org to learn more. Again, that is IllinoisFamily.org.
Hi, this is Pastor McCracken, pastor of the Church of Our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, in Markham, Illinois. For the last 4 years, our church has been struggling to overcome the city's efforts to shut us down. In the midst of all of our legal issues, we felt overwhelmed and discouraged. All we wanted to do was worship the Lord and serve our community. We needed a law firm that not only had the knowledge of the law, but the same commitment of the kingdom of God. The Lord connected us with the law firm of Malcolm Baker. The attorneys at Malcolm Baker have not only provided us with exceptional legal representation and counsel, but have also provided us with the added gift of lawyers who pray with us and seek the guidance of the Lord at every step. After working with Malcolm Baker, we can't imagine working with anyone else.
Hi, this is Noel Stert, an attorney with Malcolm Baker. If your church or ministry has any legal needs, please call us 312-726-1243 or look us up online at malcolmbaker.com.
Thanks once again for joining Illinois Family Spotlight. Monty Lurick here, joined by Mary Helen Fiorito, longtime pro-life activist attorney. Mary, before the break, we discussed the midterm elections in terms of Congress, but we have an election right here in Illinois, and pro-life voters are kind of in a quandary. The incumbent, Bruce Rauner, pro-abortion, and the Democratic challenger, J.B. Pritzker, also pro-abortion. What are we to do?
You know, this is something I myself personally, frankly, have not decided what I'm going to do yet, because J.B. Pritzker, we know what we're getting. He is 110% committed to abortion on demand and very much a funder of the groups like Planned Parenthood and NARAL. On the other hand, we have Governor Rauner, who betrayed the pro-life movement, who said he was not running as a social, you know, a social governor. He's not running on social issues. Promised many people, including Cardinal Supich, that he would veto HB 40, the public funding of abortion bill, and he lied. He lied, and he signed the bill anyway, opening up public funding for abortion and abortion on demand, even if Roe is overturned, in the state of Illinois. And so I don't know where one goes with that, right? I, you know, voting is always one of these decisions. At the end of the day, you know, you have to just look to the person that you can live with. I don't know that a protest vote helps, because Pritzker certainly is bad. I think people are saying you need to look to other issues like their fiscal responsibility and, you know, perhaps some other issues that might affect
the remap.
Faith, the remap, right? And if you can, in conscience, vote for one of them with that issue alone, but at least, you know, we won't be fooled again, right? We're not going to trust Rauner on anything that has to do with pro-life and hopefully, you know, religious liberty, too, which is such a big issue here. But the man is just, I think, I don't get the sense he's going to win this election no matter what pro-lifers do. I think he's a one-term governor. And I think it'll go back to, I mean, Jeannie Ives, the pro-life woman who ran against him in the primary, came within 2 percentage points of beating him. So that would make me nervous if I was him.
But the theory is, if Governor Rauner would win re-election,
yes,
that he would alter the face of the Republican Party, which has been pro-life here in Illinois,
right,
and stack it with so-called pro-choice Republicans,
yeah,
his candidates.
Yeah, here's the thing. The Republican Party in Illinois, I mean, I'm not a political activist. I was raised a Democrat. My father was the Democratic precinct captain in our neighborhood. I don't trust either party. I trust certain people in both parties. I have friends who are pro-life Democrats who I think are good, you know, trustworthy people. And I have, you know, friends like Jeannie Ives who I feel similarly about. But, you know, I don't think that, you know, we can't put our trust in political parties. And I'm just not enough of a political analyst to probably give you an answer that's going to be helpful to your listeners, Monty. You know, I do hope that Illinois doesn't take religious people and doesn't take the pro-life community for granted. I hope that people don't, because, you know what, we vote with our feet. And like I mentioned, you know, earlier on in our interview, you know, wild horses generally couldn't drag us away from polling places. We are loyal voters, and we are active voters, and we're educated voters. So I think it would behoove the Republican Party to court us a little bit more and to ask for our opinion on things. Because I think you're going to find in Illinois, as the country woke up to President Trump, there could be a lot of very angry people. But Illinois, as we both know as well, is losing, 1,000 people a day, something along those lines in terms of population. I don't know who's going to be left to vote in a couple of years.
You said you could vote a protest vote. Are you referring to Sam McCann, the Conservative Party candidate?
Oh.
He's got a solid pro-life record in the legislature.
Right. No, certainly. But, you know, by that you could also do a write-in, right? You could write in Jeannie Ives, though she has said that she would support the party's nominee. A vote along those lines would also be something that I think people, if their consciences would not allow them to vote for either, and I see that, you know, just as a Christian, I see how someone could come to that conclusion. Then either if you feel that the conservative candidate, it would be a has a platform that you could support 100%, then sure, by all means. But then, you know, protest votes are also a way, I think, people can express their displeasure with a certain candidate.
Do you ever foresee a time when the Democratic Party will be more open to the pro-life perspective?
I think they're going to have to be. I think if you look at the race that we saw here in Illinois between Dan Lipinski and his primary opponent, Marie Newman, the Democratic Party took a little bit of a black eye in that race. I think they came out the losers, first of all, because the number of congressmen, the number of his colleagues, who he has served with for more than a dozen years, almost 14 years now, who supported his opponent in a primary. I mean, the depths to which they will sink to appease the abortion industry are frightening. I mean, they really are. And when that was pointed out in some national publications, Cardinal Dolan, the Archbishop of New York, wrote a very pointed op-ed in the Wall Street Journal where he said, what is happening in the Democratic Party is disgraceful. You are driving people like me away. And to publicly come out and say, I mean, it is extraordinary. I don't know if people follow politics very much, if they know how unusual that is, that in a Democratic primary, for sitting congressmen to endorse opponents, when you have Dan Lipinski, who in every case, pretty much except abortion and some religious liberty issues, has voted 90% of the time with the Democratic Party platform line. Yet, because of the issue of abortion and because of some issues that surround the gay community and religious liberty, they decided he had to go. I mean, for a woman who, in my opinion, having interacted with her a couple of times, was not nearly as competent as Congressman Lipinski is. So, and he won only by 2,000 votes. So Democrats for Life just had a big national conference and very good attendance, very good turnout, you know, with the hashtag, I want my party back. You know, I think, you know, the Democratic leadership needs to decide, are these going to be the ugly stepchildren of our party? Or are we going to give them a real voice? I mean, you have to hand it at least to the Republican Party. They are very openly pro-choice Republicans or pro-abortion Republicans who are allowed to run and to function in the party, and they're not undermined by their own party, right? Whereas I think in the Democratic Party, you see pro-life candidates are actively undermined by their colleagues, and it's just not the way you run a political party, in my opinion.
What are a couple good ways for the pro-life community, pro-life voters, to go on offense?
Well, you know what? One of the ideas that I have really been promoting everywhere I can is to start with bills, to start with measures and laws, where the other side really winds up looking, you know, not only unreasonable, but also really shows their own colors in terms of how inhumane they can be. And one of those areas is perinatal hospice, which is essentially like hospice, as you would do for a person who might be elderly. Unborn children who receive an adverse prenatal diagnosis can be placed in a hospice program so that they're not immediately on the chopping block for abortion, right? And when moms are offered perinatal hospice as an option when they receive an adverse diagnosis, almost 90% of the time they will choose hospice over having an abortion. It's better for the mom in terms of study after study has shown that moms who chose perinatal hospice have a far greater bounce back, you know, in terms of their emotional health. If they're able to donate the baby's organs after the baby passes away, they get that additional sort of affirmation that they did the right thing. They're able to take pictures with their child and meet family members and hold them for a while. And, you know, all of those things contribute to a mom's healing. And also, you know, of course, it upholds the baby's dignity. Even you don't have to kill a dying child, right? So, you know, to uphold that child's dignity, even though they're sick, even though they may have severe disabilities, and say, you were a member of our human family, and for the 8 hours that you were here, we loved you and we treated you with respect, and you died peacefully, and you didn't die on the other end of an abortion instrument with your mother always wondering, what if I hadn't done this? So, and can you imagine opposing that, like being an abortion, and they will, oh, mark my words, they will, if we get this introduced federally. Can you imagine how, you know, how the public will react to people? It was like partial birth abortion, right? People saying, okay, I'm really pro-choice, but like I draw the line here. And this would just be sharing information. This is just sharing information about perinatal hospice with women who receive adverse diagnoses. Not dictating their choice, but simply presenting that option to them.
Why is Lake County Right to Life special to you?
Because, well, first of all, I can't say Lake County Right to Life without talking about Bonnie Cork, who was one of my very early mentors in the pro-life movement. I was afraid of her. I may or may not say this in my remarks, but when I first met her, she is a force with which, you know, to be contended. This, you know, petite little dynamo who has such a passion, who taught me so much. So when I was a little snot-nosed lawyer, 25 years old, first coming into the movement, she had already had at least 20 years probably under her belt coordinating pro-life activities up in this area, and really took me under her wing and helped me to know the ropes. And, you know, I feel like I have a personal and professional debt to her. And really, all pro-lifers in Illinois, she's one of these names you don't know like instantly in Illinois, but certainly the pro-life community knows her. But what she has done and what she has sacrificed over the years to build up this organization, to be a real voice for pro-life politicians and for pro-life people. She's just such an admirable person. I'm so grateful to her. So, and they're wonderful. You know, it's so funny. Everything in Illinois, as a lot of people know, tends to focus on Chicago and revolve around Chicago. And I just love being able to come up to areas like this where you have such huge, vibrant communities that might not get the time that, say, you know, a Cook County would get. But it's great to be here.
Mary Helen Fiorito, thank you so much. How can folks connect with you?
Well, you can look me up on Facebook or Twitter, or you can go to my professional page at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, which is www.eppc.org.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Monty. Great
God bless you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you to your listeners.
And God bless you, folks. Thanks for tuning in to this edition of Illinois Family Spotlight. Until next time, God bless.
Thank you for listening to Illinois Family Spotlight. For more information, please visit us at ifiaction.org and look for us on Facebook and Twitter. If you would like to email us questions or comments, please do so at feedback@ifiaction.org. Until next time, stay engaged and keep your eyes on the prize.